And one of the challenges of the ISCO 3 and the Madrid Declaration, of course, is to cover the veterinarian aspects. The challenge is that in 5 years' time, with the updated version of the Madrid Declaration, we can include among our professionals the veterinarians, because what they are doing with ozone is extremely interesting and surprising. And now I'm going to go back to basics. I'm not a physician, I'm a doctor in pharmaceutical science. I do research. And ozone therapy, it's very important that we all work together, each of us from our specialty, but to pursue a common goal and bring together all our knowledge. It's true that although I work at a lab level, I'm always in touch with the physicians. I do clinical and molecular research. And I'm going to try to explain to you the state of art of the molecular mechanisms of ozone therapy. And I'm going to underline the latest discoveries regarding the mechanism of action of ozone therapy. First of all, I'd like to underline the current challenges ozone therapy faces today. You can see them on the slide. They are well known to all of you. One big challenge is the lack of high-quality generators, so as to ensure that ozone therapy is duly implemented. I also see that one of the documents to be issued by ISCO 3 is the standardization of the terms in ozone therapy. It's very important that we all use concentrations as the parameter. In the case of direct intravenous ozone therapy, we have a problem because the Russians describe ozonated saline as a direct intravenous. So we need to make sure that we use the same vocabulary, the same terminology. That's one of the problems. And we as ISCO 3 need to address this, because there's a great confusion between ozonated saline and direct intravenous. One of the challenges ISCO 3 is facing is that of putting together a glossary to make sure that we all use the same terms. And then you have additional challenges that you can see on the slide. I've highlighted in red the lack of a sound and solid scientific knowledge or data. This doesn't mean that the information is not there for us to use. What happens is that the data aren't sufficiently published. It's very important that other professionals can access this information. At a clinical level, there is much that needs to be done as well. There are some fields of implementation or application of ozone that need to be further studied. We have some meta-analysis with ozone in, for example, back pain. And what we see is that there are some loopholes. We have some studies or trials that may seem very limited in scope because they are based on one patient, but that can be incredibly interesting. I was listening to the three cases described by Dr. Conrad. If they haven't been published yet, I encourage you to publish that information, because the effects have been demonstrated in the lab. The clinical effects have been seen. It's very important that we publish all that information. This will help us promote ozone therapy. In the history of ozone therapy, there have been some milestones that have been critical. Since ozone was discovered until the first generators were manufactured and we started implementing ozone at a topical level. And it's very important that we have a greater knowledge on the mechanism of action of ozone. In the beginning, it was used empirically. But little by little, we collected more and more data. We started to collect more information regarding autoimmunotherapy, rectal ozone. In the 81, we started with the orthopedic applications. And as of the year 2000, the pioneer in ozone therapy who was present in the room started to research ozone as part of clinical trials. And probably the first mission commissioned to Dr. Voschi was extremely important as it kicked off all the change. And let me refer to a study, a trial conducted by Cuban colleagues and Mr. Bocci. For the first time, they talked about the oxidative preconditioning. What is oxidative preconditioning? It can be described as the antioxidant effect that is produced as a result of the ongoing or continuous stimulation with ozone, because the synthesis of antioxidant enzymes is boosted. So what we see is that an oxidating agent stimulates an antioxidating reaction. And there are many clinical trials that have demonstrated this oxidative preconditioning. And this discovery is very much related to a process regarding the protein synthesis. When I stimulate with ozone, there is a synthesis of proteins that is boosted. Later on, a series of clinical trials were conducted. Many seminars were organized and conferences. And little by little, the application of ozone therapy was broadened. At the beginning, we had some experimental models. And at the beginning, it was very, very limited. We didn't really know what happened at a nuclear level in order to stimulate the synthesis of protein. In the year 2014, an experiment was conducted that I will explain to you at the end of my presentation. Dr. Bocci is involved in this experiment. And during this experiment, we discovered the mechanism that stimulates the protein synthesis at a nuclear level. Another milestone in ozone therapy history is 2003, when it was discovered that once a molecule is covered by in vivo antibodies, produces ozone as part of the defense mechanisms. As part of those mechanisms that destroy that immunocomplex. Thus, ozone plays a physiological role. We generate it at small amounts, and that helps us understand the mechanism of action of ozone. These mechanisms of action can be divided into two main groups. We have one first mechanism that is not that complicated, and it's one of the mechanisms used by our previous speakers in animals. She used high doses to minimize the microbiome. Or when we use high doses in a wound to disinfect it, or when we inject it in a pain site and ozone reacts immediately with pain mediators and oxidates to these mediators. This is what we call mechanism A, i.e. a direct mechanism of oxidation. Simple as that. But most of the ozone-mediated mechanisms follow a more complex sequence. Well, when we use low doses, what happens is that we need to go through these different stages, the ozone oxidates mediators, these mediators oxidize messengers that have an impact on targets, on erythrocytes, and this leads to the end response. This long mechanism explains why we need to repeat ozone therapy, and it explains also why, of course, if we wish to have that end response, we need some time. This mechanism has a very particular behavior that is the result of all it does with the ormetines. There's an ormetic factor involved that differentiates ozone from traditional drugs. Here to the left, we have the mathematical relation of a drug that interacts with a receptor. This is something that we've seen in classical pharmacology. We see the sinusoidal curves that describe what happens between a drug and a receptor. Number of receptors, affinities of the drug with the receptor, influence on this curve. However, the response to the ozone is not sinusoidal. The response is different, and what we can see is an ormotic behavior. This is a nonlinear relation, so the response will not be linear. So you won't get a greater response depending on the level of dose. So the greater the ozone doesn't need, the greater the response. So there you have all the mechanism oxidation of mediators that generate hydrogen peroxide, alkanols, and other oxidated molecules. This is a cascade that is very different to that which is unleashed by traditional drugs that bind to receptors. In this 2012 paper, we summarized the conclusions of some doctors that had worked with different doses of ozones in an experimental manner and had obtained unexpected effects. If you take a look at the, if you think about the presentations by our Russian colleagues, you can see that they have obtained those ormotic results in their studies or trials. What we did was to re-examine the results of their studies in order to analyze the ormetics. The doctor this morning told us that she used three different concentrations of oil. In the case of superoxide dismutase, the lower dose increases the concentration of superoxide dismutase, as she told us. And this, however, didn't happen with the intermediate and the high dose. Same thing happened with the MDA and with the saline. We saw this depicted in red, blue, and green lines. So three different doses that are not linear. This means that the higher the dose doesn't translate into the greater the effect. Actually, in on this slide, you can see how we have some inverted curves in a trial with rats that received cisplatin-induced nephrotoxicity. We analyzed different parameters. There, for example, you have the concentration of creatinine in the saline and superoxide dismutase. And the points are the growing concentrations of ozone. So one dose of ozone of this level produces this effect. A growing dose of ozone reduces creatinine in the saline. Here we have a positive effect. And a higher dose of ozone produces damage, increases the levels of creatinine as opposed to the baseline. This is like a damage marker. If we consider the level of SO2 as a marker of positive response to the therapy, we see that the intermediate dose has a positive effect and the higher doses don't have an effect on the SOD. And this is something that applies to other particles as well. So with very low doses, sometimes we don't have an effect because our antioxidant systems inhibit the action of ozone. And then, however, with intermediate doses, we obtain an effect, a therapeutic effect. However, if the doses increase, we're going to damage. And now, to try to explain this mechanism explained in broad terms by Dr. Bocci, I'm going to use this slide, so that it is clearer in your mind, so that you understand how ozone operates at a nuclear level. So I'm going to run you through the process, through the experiment, with a greater detail, so that you understand the mechanism and how it acts. Here we have a very general mechanism whereby a cell, when subject to stress, responds. How does it respond? If I damage the cell at a low level, there are mechanisms that help us revert that process and the cell can survive. However, if the damage is greater, the mechanisms are irreversible. There's apoptosis or programmed death cells, so the cell will die. Each of these mechanisms that can stress the cell have an underlying molecular mechanisms. we have different molecular mechanisms. There you have them duly listed: oxidative stress, you know, toxic stress, heat shock, ER stress. And this was well known for oxidative substances. And this was the basis of the hypothesis of the study at a genomic level. Oxidants in general have this molecular mechanism. And therefore, since ozone is an oxidant, it basically uses that same mechanism. And the mechanism for oxidants, how can it be described? Here we have a general explanation. There's a mechanism whereby when the cell is stressed, there's an activation through a transducer. There's a signal that is sent to the sensor. There's a dislocation of the sensor from its repressure. The active molecule is going to interact with nucleic acid, with the white genes and the nucleic acid, and a series of signals are going to be generated. That's the general mechanism. And now let's take a look at what happens with oxidants. What are those little balls going to do? Okay, here we have the slide. There you have the cytoplasm, the nucleus, and the cytoplasm. We have this molecule, NRF2. This is, and then there is a protein that is bound to it in an ubiquitin area that is going to send this molecule towards the degradation. So this complex is created in the cytoplasm, and then it decays until there is an oxidative signal or oxidative stress that will oxidate the protein. And as a result, what we see is that there's a release of the NRF2. And this free on NRF2 can penetrate the nucleus and reach antioxidant response elements, or AREs, or electrophile responsive elements, and to activate the synthesis of proteins, among them the antioxidant enzymes. That's the general mechanism. And now let's apply it to ozone. And to this end, I'm going to use this slide that describes the background for ozone and NRF2. Almost 80% on the basic papers on ozone therapy are devoted to studying ozone as a toxic agent, as an environmental pollutant. And within those studies, there are studies of the actual mechanism of ozone and the fact that it is mediated by the NRF2. In the year 2004, there's this study with mice that suffer lung and liver damage as a result of breathing ozone. We already knew that NRF2 was part of the problem. Then in 2011, there's a second paper that is published regarding ozonized cell line activation of KIAP1 NRF2. And in 2013, there's yet another paper on mice. And it is seen that the patients, the mice with NRF2 could resist this toxic ozone, and those that didn't weren't able to survive because they couldn't respond to NRF2. So that's the background. But all these papers focused on ozone as a toxic. And in 2014, we have this experiment from Italy. Dr. Voci was involved. This was a very complex experiment that was very, very well conducted. And here you have the main findings, or the main elements to be considered. First, let's mention that they compared 20 milliliters of human serum and 20 milliliters of ozone at this concentration. And the first conclusion or finding is that the mediators increase for HNE and oxygen peroxide. Here we have the mediators, the drugs. This is the prodrug ozone when it reacts with the human serum. And what happens is that they unleash or generate the substances that generate the signal. This first step was well known. So what did they do? What they did was to combine this 20 mil human serum with the ozone, and they added these antioxidants in culture cells in order to see whether there was a release of NRF2. And in order to verify that this happened, they measured the concentration of NRF2 both inside and outside the cell nucleus. And in this graph, you can see that as the concentration increases, there's an increase in the concentration of NRF2 within the nucleus. But this is not enough. The fact that it is released and that it enters the nucleus, we need to have a synthesis of protein. That's why they culture the plaques during 6 and 22 hours, and they measure two proteins. Here I'm showing you hemoxygenase 1, so that you can see that the binding of NRF2 to the nucleus led to an activation of protein synthesis. And this is a milestone in the history of ozone therapy. And is an important turning point, because basically we discovered how at a nuclear level ozone really works. In 1998, we already saw that synthesis of proteins, but we didn't know where it came from. And then there was a subsequent trial, and we published the results in the European Journal of Pharmacology. And I'm going to show you a slide to explain to you what it was about. The previous experiment was ex vivo because it was based on human serum, and then we used cultured cells, endothelial cultured cells. And this other trial, which is more modest, tried to see whether the situation could occur in human beings. So to this end, we had 6 volunteers. We used a dose of 45 micrograms per kilogram of body weight at a concentration of 35 micrograms per milliliter. We took several samples, one in blood, towards the bottle without ozonizing, another blood sample ozonated in the bottle, yet another sample 30 minutes after, after the autoimmunotherapy, and then another sample after 4 sessions of autoimmunotherapy. We separated the lymphocytes, separated the nucleus, broke down the nucleus, and within the nucleus we measured the amount of NRF2, which is what you can see here. And the results, some of them have been unexplained. The basal NRF2 level is there for you to see. And when we put ozone in contact with blood, there is an immediate response in lymphocytes. There is an increase in the NRF2 that goes to the nucleus. And this result is incredible, because this graph here illustrates what happens in the circulating leukocytes. They are exposed to the ozonated blood that passed by. And then we see what happens after the autoimmunotherapy. And we see that during a period of time, there's no stimulation of this mechanism. And there's something here that is hitting to us and that remains unexplained. The leukocytes exposed to ozone transmit signals to the remaining population. We also measure after 4 autoimmunotherapy what happened with the synthesis of the superoxide dismutating catalase, and we saw the effect that we had seen previously for ozone. So the findings came to confirm what had been seen, came to confirm the hormetic effects of ozone. That is very important for you to take into consideration. These hermetic effects. And we need to consider that we have discovered what happened at a nuclear level. And this brings my presentation to a close. Thanks very much.